Monday, May 27th. Memorial Day was sunny and warm. The McIntosh team loyalists, Debbie Coleman, Mike Murray, Susan Barnes, and Bob Belleville, got to Jobs's Woodside home an hour before the scheduled dinner so they could plot strategy. Sitting on the patio as the sun set, Coleman told Jobs that he should accept Scully's offer to be a product visionary and help start up Apple Labs. Of all the inner circle, Coleman was the most willing to be realistic. In the new organization plan, Scully had tapped her to run the manufacturing division because he knew that her loyalty was to Apple and not just to Jobs. Some of the others were more hawkish. They wanted to urge Markkula to support a reorganization plan that put Jobs in charge. When Markkula showed up, he agreed to listen with one proviso. Jobs had to keep quiet. "I seriously wanted to hear the thoughts of the McIntosh team, not watch Jobs enlist them in a rebellion," he recalled. As it turned cooler, they went inside the sparsely furnished mansion and sat by a fireplace. Instead of letting it turn into a gripe session, Markkula made them focus on very specific management issues, such as what had caused the problem in producing the file server software and why the McIntosh distribution system had not responded well to the change in demand. When they were finished, Markkula bluntly declined to back Jobs. "I said I wouldn't support his plan, and that was the end of that," Markkula recalled. Scully was the boss. They were mad and emotional and putting together a revolt, but that's not how you do things. Tuesday, May 28th. His ire stoked by hearing from Markkula that Jobs had spent the previous evening trying to subvert him, Scully walked over to Jobs' office on Tuesday morning. He had talked to the board, he said, and he had its support. He wanted Jobs out. Then he drove to Markkula's house, where he gave a presentation of his reorganization plans. Markkula asked detailed questions, and at the end he gave Scully his blessing. When he got back to his office, Scully called the other members of the board just to make sure he still had their backing. He did. At that point, he called Jobs to make sure he understood. The board had given final approval of his reorganization plan, which would proceed that week. Gasset would take over control of Jobs's beloved McIntosh as well as other products, and there was no other division for Jobs to run. Scully was still somewhat conciliatory. He told Jobs that he could stay on with the title of board chairman and be a product visionary with no operational duties. But by this point, even the idea of starting a skunk work such as Apple Labs was no longer on the table. It finally sank in. Jobs realized there was no appeal, no way to warp the reality. He broke down in tears and started making phone calls to Bill Campbell, Jay Elliott, Mike Murray, and others. Murray's wife Joyce was on an overseas call when Jobs phoned, and the operator broke in saying it was an emergency. "It had better be important," she told the operator. "It is," she heard Jobs say. When her husband got on the phone, Jobs was crying. "It's over," he said. Then he hung up. Murray was worried that Jobs was so despondent he might do something rash, so he called back. There was no answer, so he drove to Woodside. No one came to the door when he knocked, so he went around back and climbed up some exterior steps and looked in the bedroom. Jobs was lying there on a mattress in his unfurnished room. He let Murray in, and they talked until almost dawn. Wednesday, May 29th. Jobs finally got hold of a tape of Patton, which he watched Wednesday evening, but Murray prevented him from getting stoked up for another battle. Instead, he urged Jobs to come in on Friday for Scully's announcement of the reorganization plan. There was no option left other than to play the good soldier rather than the renegade commander.